When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
After working in construction and design for 45 years, my guest today understands the frustrations of managing wasteful processes. In his own words, "I too have been in the position of working too many hours and not being able to accomplish everything I wanted. My colleagues and I fought against the foggy monster of wasteful processes, but we could have done more if we only had more hours in the week." Finally, in 2008, Dan Fauché learned about lean construction and design from the founders of the Lean Construction Institute, Greg Howell and Glenn Ballard. It changed his life. He became impatient with wasting too many hours and missing moments with his family. Since then, he shares, teaches, and coaches others who want a better life for themselves and their friends and family. Lean techniques are powerful, often simple, but create value instead of waste by achieving what all of us want, flow. Hundreds of clients and colleagues have proven this works over and over. Dan helps them nurture a lean culture among their colleagues by facilitating and coaching last planner pull planning, collaborative big rooms, lean alignment partnering, root cause analysis, value stream mapping and process mapping, strategic planning and project realignment for design and construction issue resolution, as well as IPD and progressive design build team development. Wow. That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff. Yeah. Well, there is a lot of stuff in this world.
I'm not done introducing you yet. I was me making a comment. If you can't behave yourself,
I'll be quiet.
I would close by saying that Dan would say, once you live and work this way, you won't be satisfied with it returning to the old world of waste. Dan, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Thank you, Dennis. It's an honor. And I couldn't have said it better myself, what you just described.
Since you probably wrote it. So, yeah. But I think, you know, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Again, as I react to it now, having read it in this format, what jumps out to me is probably what grabbed me when I had the privilege of keynoting your Lean Construction Institute Congress a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And that is one of the essential considerations in Lean is around the words respect for people.
Absolutely.
And again, you respect people by making sure they're not working 24 hours a day.
Yep.
You respect people by being transparent and becoming trustworthy. Lean inculcates soft skills in a very big way, in my view. And again, I'm a little biased in a good way.
In a good way.
But the other thing that jumps out to me is there are several discrete techniques and tools that are part of the overall lean process that people are taught. And they're taught in really thinking the traditional way of teaching. And that is, these are skills. Skills can be taught. You can learn, you can improve upon them over time by practicing them.
Right.
And as you know, and as I know from our many years, we have roughly the same number of years in the industry, you know, one of the biggest problems that continues to be a problem is that when we think about developing people's skills and abilities, first of all, we don't focus at all on the soft skill stuff.
Right.
So I'll just push that aside. But on the hard skills, the technical stuff, and this is technical in nature, but not, you know, it's not rocket science. It's mostly logical and sensible. And I think one of the problems is, which Lean, I believe, addresses, and I want you to comment on anything I've said in one more sentence. I think Lean does a good job of is recognizing that you can't just go to a 1, 2, or 3-day workshop and then go back and implement this flawlessly.
Right.
There needs to be an opportunity for continued learning. And that's why one of the things we're going to talk about in our roughly 30 minutes is the work you're doing around peer-to-peer learning. Because I think it's relevant. So what are your first set of thoughts out of that little opening?
My first set of thoughts on that are you're absolutely right. There are a series of technical skills to learn to be really good at doing lean design or lean construction. But interestingly and appropriately, in terms of the soft as steel or the soft skills idea, is that lean tightly couples learning with action. And as you're learning these skills, you're actually learning soft skills. You're learning how to relate to each other, how to be more transparent, how to be more collaborative. You're learning respect for people in just the very things that you're experiencing and doing. because we're big about doing in teaching any of these things. If you want to learn root cause analysis, do a root cause analysis, you know, with a coach, with a facilitator, and the same with the last planner system. If you want to plan a project, do that. Don't just talk about it. And the other thing I would point out is that the 1, 2, and 3 day training you're describing is rarer and rarer these days, and for good reason. One is everybody got tired of the long meetings about the year 2000 when COVID set in, and we found out we didn't have to have them. in addition to that, companies tend to be pretty stingy on their training budgets. So, and there's a third
aspect. You're being kind.
And there's a third aspect, and that is that the time you spend sitting in a classroom with a sage on a stage, that retention that comes out of that time is relatively small. You and I know this. We've talked about this. How do you get the retention rate up? And so the peer-to-peer and video training that you mentioned and that we'll talk about is part of it.
Absolutely. Whenever I close a workshop, and I still do workshops on project management, on estimating, the my challenge to the folks in the room is that if you leave here after we've talked about certain things, you've done some activities, et cetera, if you leave here and you don't take something with you that you begin to use immediately when you return to the shop, to the yard, to your project site, all this was a 2-day training event.
Yeah.
Period. Hard stop.
Use it or lose it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, again, I think one of the things, I get one of the structural aspects of trying to make as available as possible places for continued interaction in the lean community are your locally focused communities.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about those and the role they play in taking technical skills and bringing it into the culture of how you can more successfully build projects.
Well, you're talking about the lean communities of practice, COPs, they call them, communities of practice. And these are practitioners in 30-some cities around the United States and other lean construction institutes in other areas, Qatar, UK, Ireland, and Germany, other places. They all, I think, have them. But here's how we do it in the U.S. Someone locally takes charge. There's a small steering committee, and they're not paid. They're, you know, LCI has one person, Denise, who's kind of helping from a staff perspective for the whole country, providing resources and scheduling and all that, advertising. But the communities themselves are self-governing. What they very often do is exchange. So they swap stories. I mean, they'll have someone present what's going on in their program, something that failed and how they turned it around, or something that succeeded wildly and how they did it and why we could do it again and all that. So those are peer-to-peer kinds of, I mean, sometimes they're presentations, but very often they're just discussions or discussion after a presentation. And it's a great way of, you know, it's a smaller group, anywhere from 10 to 40 typically. Although I've been in COPs that have as many as 100 people in them, those are pretty spectacular. But it's different; it changes the character a bit too.
Yeah, and one of the aspects of it again is it is a way to expand and perpetuate the lean culture.
Yes.
By being with being in a room with people that have the same set of beliefs around this process, the processes, the tools, the techniques, and just reinforcing that with again, as you said, exchanging stories, which is a very practical way for people to learn from other people's experiences. But also, I imagine, particularly when you had 100 people, that there was some aspect of almost like a rally kind of feel and energy, which is a positive thing.
Very positive.
And And you don't see in a lot of places, you don't see people with, you know, doing wild applause, you know, in some of the conferences you and I both attend where somebody gets up on a stage like I did, or I do occasionally, and just goes, talks for 45 yeah. minutes, and then there's polite applause and he's out the door. your communities of practice are not about that.
No.
I think it kind of bridges in. Let's talk now, and we're going to jump around. One of the things you want to make sure that we touched on, and let's do it right now. Yeah. Let's talk about the work that's being done that you're involved with on peer-to-peer learning, and how it's being implemented, how it's benefiting people's continued development, et cetera, et cetera.
I've been involved in lifelong learning my whole life, as have you, and I genuinely believe in continuing to research, to read research papers, not only in the lean disciplines from the International Group for Lean Construction, IGLC, but just research papers on PubMed, you know, the National Institutes of Health, researching certain topics. And in doing that, we have found that 70% of people learn from their peers or by reading articles and blogs on a weekly basis, and 53% learn from videos in any given week. Now, that was a study of 512 people done back in 2016 by Degree. I conduct research on LinkedIn with my peers my 10,000 peers. And recently we surveyed and asked people, how do you yourself learn? 57% said from others, my peers. Mm-hmm. And a third said videos online. So it's really the way people learn. We just don't think of that as training per se. The way you conduct your classes, Dennis, is I think friendlier to the peer-to-peer than one would think when they think of a presentation or a workshop or a class. You do tend to engage in a really soft as steel kind of way. What we have developed is you can't be everywhere. This is the thing. It's a $6 trillion industry, construction, around the world. And it's wasting at least half the money all the time. And there's such a crying need for infrastructure around the world and for new homes and you know, all the hospitals and all that stuff. Worse in some places than others, but it's a desperate need around the world. And yet we're wasting half the money we spend. So if we could save a third of that, mm-hmm. which is easy to do if you start implementing lean, if we can save that, we can invest it in the next project. And for those of who are there on a profit motive, you can put some of that in your pocket too, mm-hmm. which you need to keep the company going to make more jobs and to do more good things. The problem is, how do you get the word out to so many people? And lean has been growing in my experience, 15 years in the lean community. It's been growing and growing and growing, but it's never exploded. It's never hit the tipping point. And so my peers and I, Andy Fulton and Kyle Martinez and Renee Bustamante, decided way back in 2018, 2019, we need to also have some access to these ideas and these learning techniques virtually, 24/7 online. And so we created a learning management site for folks with 3 to 9 minute videos, short attention span videos, just like we all have these days, mm-hmm. By courses and topics and they're fun things. But we also stumbled across something else. We call them video action teams. And this is where you get 6 to 8 people in a company or on a project, and you all decide you're going to learn this thing together. And so you watch 15 minutes of video a week on your own time, typically. Anybody can spend 15 minutes. And then you get together for 45 minutes, in person or virtually, and you talk about what you saw and how you're going to apply it right now on your project or in your office or wherever. Mm-hmm. And that combination of video and discussion to refine everything and then putting it into action, that is a powerful combination. And it is what Harvard Business Review article described as the best of all the possible worlds. You know, it has technology, it has discussion, it has learning from each other, and it has action to implement things. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it goes without saying that at least one of the generations that would greatly appreciate and take to that like a duck to water are the younger generations.
Yeah. They're used to video.
Yeah. In fact, ironically, I'm going to be having a conversation shortly with Jan Tuchman, who's somebody I'm sure you know from her 20 plus years as the editor of ENR.
Yeah.
So she's been a very close and active and is now a cherished observer of the construction industry.
Yeah.
And
see,
she talks about everything ranging from the people stuff, which I talk about, as well as observing what's going on in terms of technologies in our industry. So this way of learning, which sounds like it would apply across the board,
right,
but certainly an attractive aspect of saying to a young person, this is one of the ways that you're going to learn, develop more capability, more ability, et cetera,
yeah,
is by using these tools. So I think it's great.
Thanks. I agree. And yeah, the feedback we get from those who are using these video action teams is extremely strong. We developed a video action team guide for each of the topics. We chopped it up so that they only need to watch about 15 minutes of video for each session. A session could be a week or a month. And then the questions relate to that. And so it's packaged in a way you don't have to do much other than watch the video and ask each other the questions, you know, self-facilitate the questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk a little bit about if there is a connection. Again, I've been trying to learn things like every day, Dan, for years.
Me too.
Some days I just don't remember what I learned. And this may be an example of that. Talk about the connection between IPD, integrated project delivery, and Lean. How do they work together?
Well, IPD grew out of Lean. When Greg and Glenn and a number of folks in other parts of the world who tend to be more on the academic side, when they were kind of initially starting this whole thing, putting these ideas together, researching and gathering and experimenting in the 90s, and then finally really beginning to launch this about the year 2000, a couple of years before for some, the whole idea there was this kind of ability to relate to each other in a collaborative fashion. And one of the owners that jumped on the bandwagon very quickly was an outfit in California called Sutter Health. They were building a lot of hospitals, and California had a big earthquake. Well, they have earthquakes all the time, but they had a big one in 1987 that caused some legislation to require the hospitals retrofit and withstand much more severe seismic forces. So a lot of hospital building has occurred in the last 30 years, or rebuilding. And Sutter was really troubled by this aspect that they're losing a lot of money in waste. And so they started using Lean principles, and they began trying to implement them with the existing contract language and found that it was a tough fit. You know, it almost fit, but not quite. And so Will Lichtig, way back in about 2004, working with Greg, I think, developed what's called the IFOA, Integrated Form of Agreement, which is the contract for IPD, Integrated Project Delivery. And what that basically means is everybody signs one contract in the purest form. Designer, builder, owner, electrical contractor, consultant, major, you know, structural consultant, whoever's got a big chunk of this, they sign one contract. And one of the elements of the contract is not how you accuse each other and sue each other. One of the elements of the contract is we'll figure out how to get along. We'll figure out how to communicate with each other. I mean, it's you talk about soft as steel. If you put that in a contract, it is soft as steel because the contract is steel. And so IPD has the ability, it creates the atmosphere for all of these other good things to happen. It leverages lean. So Bolt, one of the early companies to start using this, has actually trademarked the phrase lean IPD because they absolutely integrate it. And there are contracts.
Who is that? You said, who is that?
Bolt, B-O-L-D-T.
Oh, Bolt, yes, yeah. Right, yes. I was. No, Nick and I talked about that in our conversation.
Yeah. And it's the way to make sure that everybody does it. The thing is, you can do lean without it. In fact, AGC's consensus docs has a bolt-on addendum to any contract that lets you use lean. But if you really want to clean it up and get it pure and get the absolute best value and drive down cost and be on time or ahead of schedule, IPD is the way to go.
Yeah. So fundamentally, and again, I'm now recalling this, fundamentally the idea behind IPD and their form of agreement was to create something that would facilitate communication between the parties.
Yeah.
Rather than have those communications in the form of memoranda and change orders and RFIs and all those other fun things.
Well, and you know, traditional construction, non-traditional construction, is principally silos, a bunch of silos. And you know, designers in one silo and the owners in another and the builders in another. And each of the trades is in their own little silo. And you get these 20 or 30 or 40 silos they're trying to work together collaboratively, which from a supply chain point of view is absurd, but also from a collaborative point of view is very difficult to overcome. So some things like Last Planner System, which causes us all to collaborate in planning and in execution, some of those things get us most of the way there, a lot of the way there. But the siloing of mentalities, I'm just doing my job. I don't care what your job is. I don't care how it affects you. Is one of the reasons that we're so wasteful in the business. So
yeah. So this may not be the headline, but it's one of the questions, because you've been deeply involved with this for a long time. Yeah. So you know what's involved in first understanding, learning, practicing, improving the benefits of it, seeing the results, seeing the waste getting driven out. Why isn't it more widely used?
Yeah, we keep asking. It is more widely used, but by increments. we're reaching for the tipping point. We're looking for the moment when everybody goes, I could have had a V8. All this time I've been working 60, 80 hours a week, not spending time with my family, being with my kids, and I'm just working, and I was a project manager most of those years pre-lean, and I realized once I learned from Greg and Glenn and others, I realized that I was a great manager of waste. You know, that I documented it, I processed it, and I was a great manager of waste. And if when you wake up and realize life is too short, you don't have time to waste anything. When you really want to get into it. So that's the realization that the rest of us need to get. The problem is there's money in waste, Dennis. There's money in waste. Anybody who's involved in any dispute, there's money there. There is a famous contractor. I won't say his name or his company's names, but you know who he is, who was once called by a mayor of Los Angeles the king of change orders, because he loves waste. He makes tons of money on waste. His principal business is just figuring out where the mistakes are and making money on it. But that's a really cynical way of doing business. And it's not as much fun. And the people who work for you don't have as much fun.
I thought just came into my mind and just went right back out. And we know how that works.
I've had it happen twice just now.
Just in one little sequence.
Yeah.
I know what it was. and maybe the percentage is a little bit off, but one of the things that I talk about, we went through the years on the broader base, talking about total quality management.
And doing
something as simple as time analysis to understand, you know, how an 8-hour day was actually being utilized. Yeah. And there were three pieces of the pie: primary time, secondary time, and this big thing called recoverable lost time.
Yeah.
Waste, in other words. You know, and I say to my workshop, that's when you're on a job site and you're literally look around and nothing is happening.
Yeah.
And the reasons nothing is happening could be many.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is nothing is happening, and it accounts for well over a third of a typical day.
Yeah.
And some of them are astonished.
Yeah.
But then I asked them to just kind of, you know, almost like close your eyes and just think about what your typical day looks like. You know, you don't always have the right 5-gallon kits of paint there.
Yeah.
That you were expecting to have on the job site when you arrived to begin painting. You don't, you know, something else gets held up. There's a safety incident on the job site. There's an OSHA inspection that comes into the job. All these kinds of things which cause waste. And the biggest area of waste, of course, we're a labor intensive industry.
Yeah.
It's people.
People.
You know,
57% of labor is waste, according to CII. Construction industry.
Is that right? So my 35% is low.
Well, it's yours is of the whole thing, and it probably is accurate. Although I would nudge it up a bit, but
all right, I'll nudge it.
Alone, 57%, according to a Construction Industry Institute study from years ago, 57% is waste, and a lot of that is just in waiting, you know, reworking because we screwed it up or something.
Right. Well, and the other place, and you probably would be saying this next, but I'll jump in and say that. And the other reason that is all happening is because communication is poor.
Yeah.
We don't really understand each other. The superintendent gives a direction and says to the foreman, you got that? And the foreman says yes, and then turns away and takes two steps and says in his mind, what did he say? You know.
Yeah.
But they won't turn around and go back and say, I'm not sure I understood you.
That's right.
So again, lean inculcates the whole notion. If you want to start at the foundation, and maybe this is my interpretation of the lean principles, at least one that I think is important. If you start with the premise the thing that really is the foundation for this culturally is respect for people.
Yeah.
And if you take it a step further, one of the ways you demonstrate respect for people is how you go about working with each other.
Really?
And working with each other involves doing things. And one of those things you have to do a lot of every day is communicate with each other. Is that a fair
spot on.
Explanation?
Absolutely spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Let me see what else I want to talk to you about. If I start another topic, we'll be here for an hour. And that's
don't
a challenge.
Don't get me started.
Don't get me started. You gotta get me stopped. The answer is it's expanding. That means lean. Using the lean techniques, lean systems, et cetera, is expanding incrementally.
Yes. Let me give a stat. We did some research ourselves, my colleagues and I, a couple of years ago. And we took the list of Lean Construction Institute members in the U.S. And then we looked up in ENR, your friend, in ENR's ranking of general contractors and trade contractors. We looked up the dollar volume per year on that given year of all of them and matched that to this LCI list. And what we found was that 29% of all construction in the United States, non-single family housing construction in the U.S., 29% is done by LCI members, Lean Construction Institute members. So they know about lean. They are using lean, but not everywhere. And that's what's holding us back. Is that if part of your organization is using it effectively and that's not being communicated to the rest of the organization or the folks up top don't get it, that this we really could do this everywhere and we'd all be better off, that's when it hits the tipping point.
Yeah.
Already have awareness by the community.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think about, and when we use names, but if you think about some of the mega projects that are going on now related to electronic vehicles and batteries and what have you, those are just incredible projects. I had a chance to visit one, and I was invited to do a workshop on leadership.
Nice.
Using an assessment tool, which I use quite often. And we had two locations. One group was 60 people. The other group was 40, and they were all frontline superintendents, foremen, et cetera. Two of the general superintendents from two different departments is the way they described their operation. One was from the concrete department, were the ones that sought me out and invited me to come to deliver my programs. And so what you're describing, again, play it out even there, because one or two departments or one or two trades, were getting the message and hopefully beginning to try to use it, but others were not.
Yeah.
And that's basically what you're describing. There's some really great companies out there. And again, I didn't know a third of the business. I mean, that's incredible to me, because I can think of at least three or four that off the top of my head that I know and I've had experience with. But you're right, because again, one of the challenges, and again, I think your peer-to-peer program is a positive ingredient. I think the communities of practice is really, really important.
Yep.
Meaning Lean. Now, all of a sudden, become your cheerleader, your spokesperson.
Welcome.
but what needs to happen, it needs to be continuously talked about.
Yeah.
And so companies that are members, you need to find the champion. To use the trite term, the champion in executive leadership, that's going to say, the concrete guys are using this stuff. They're using Last Planner, but our framers are not, our drywallers are not, our this or that, whatever it is. We need to get everybody using it, because that's just different phases of the same building project. And how can we affect the entire building project unless we're attacking the whole thing?
Yeah.
Is that a fair way to describe the situation?
Absolutely fair way to describe it. And a key to that is the owner community.
Yes.
The people who buy the buildings and the roads and the plants and the data centers. When they realize how much they benefit from it and they require it, then we do it much faster.
Yeah.
That's really how Lean got its kickstart, was with companies like Sutter and others that just jumped in there and said, yes, we're doing this.
Right.
University of California, San Francisco, my friend James Pease, who started at Sutter, by the way, with Digby Christian. James Pease knows, he's probably the expert on integrated project delivery. He's got a great website. And James is, as an owner, using those principles, requiring Lean and IPD as much as possible, depending on the project. Some projects are tiny, but still could use it, I guess. Mm-hmm. When the owner requires it, it gets done.
Yeah. Again, we've been around a long time, so we've heard that in relation to different waves of progress and professionalism in the industry. One of them, which again, the owner, has been more successfully driving it, is the CCM certification, the credential the CMAA promotes.
Yeah.
The whole conversation back, I was at CMAA around the same time you became a Lean disciple. I was there in 2009 to 12 or so. And I remember one of the ongoing conversations was, if the owners asked for it, right now they're not. They seem to be satisfied with the PMP. But again, CMA has continued to grow, and it should, just as LCI and its community continues to need to grow, because at the end of the day, it's helping to produce better results for the owners, as you pointed out.
Yeah. And because owners are requesting that when they hire someone who says they're Lean, that their staff are Lean, that they have some way of demonstrating it, because sometimes people just talk.
Yeah.
LCI has come up with a certification program. If you've had 3 years experience in Lean, on a Lean project, or with Lean principles in a company, and you know X number of things, and you can answer, pass a test, and you have a portfolio of your work in Lean, you can get this rather difficult to achieve certification, but it's pure gold.
Yeah.
And 500 people have jumped right in. They just started in October, and 500 people have jumped in, and a number of them have started receiving certification.
Right.
This is a way for owners to know they're getting staff
sure.
and managers
sure.
who know this stuff.
Absolutely. That makes total sense. I mean, you, yeah. and you're seeing the notion of certifications in the trades,
yeah.
certifications in glazing, certifications in industrial painting
Absolutely.
And coatings and all those trade related. But, you know, my view, and this is the way I talk about estimating when I teach that class, I said, you know, estimating is another trade. And
yeah.
we got to learn it. We got to get better at it, because if we don't have good estimating, we may win a lot of jobs. We may also lose our ass on a lot of jobs. And, you know, so the whole idea of an independent mechanism to
yeah.
say that a person really does
yeah.
have experience, really does know
right.
a certain quantity of information, a body
yeah.
of knowledge, if you will, I think that's a tremendous stride. And the reaction, obviously, if 500 people are already jumping in and getting on board with it, that may be the accelerant, to use your term on your sheet.
Could be.
Yeah. That
yeah.
may seem to cause the construction accelerator right there.
Yeah.
I'm reading your little
right.
thing.
There we go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dan, our time is up.
Shameless self-promotion.
In fact, I noticed it because I was also counting how many times you mentioned soft as steel. And I appreciate that, but it was only 6 times.
Oh, okay. Well, it was more than your other guests typically do.
Well, you know, some of them are really nice to me because they know that I'm a little crazy, you know, so they try to be really nice to me to kind of keep me in check. Dan, this has been, the energy is incredible for two old guys to go at it in
yeah.
this fashion. The positivity, the sense of humor, again, you prove over and over again why you're so, and I'll use this word and you're not going to like it. Your status in the lean, from everything that I can detect as an outsider, you are revered.
Wow.
And I think in part it's because you're old. I mean, let's be honest
yeah.
about that part.
Yeah.
But
survived that long. It's like an old turtle, right? You got to respect the 100-year-old
yeah.
turtle.
But I think what it is, and I want to offer this as a serious thought, in roughly 2008, 2009, you became a disciple. You learned about something that two men had worked hard on for years before that. And I think anybody that I would talk to, and I think actually Nick Loughran and I talked about that a little bit, and that is that, you know, everybody knows Dan. And it's not because, you know, that you're loud or obnoxious. It's because that you're a good human. You got a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
You're effective when you're talking about all this stuff. And people like to hear important things from people that are nice to listen to. And you're one of those people.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Dan.
This has been so much fun to have this conversation with you. So our paths have crossed now twice in the last 2+ years.
Yeah.
Thanks again for coming on the Soft to Steel podcast.
My honor. Sincerely.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.